Now, with the latest from the world of technology, this is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenwick.
I quite like the number of apps that are already available.
Tech Guide.
The iPad 2 still beats just about everything on the market. The new iPad has just kicked away even further.
Tech Guide.
I quite enjoyed using it. Great design. The operating system worked hand in hand with the hardware as well.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is obviously a hot-selling device.
Tech Guide.
You know, we want them to be light. We want them to be portable. And this one's very fast with i7 and i5 processors.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenwick.
Tech Guide, episode 44. Hello and welcome to our podcast, the show that will keep you updated and educated about the latest consumer tech news and reviews. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. My name is Stephen Fenwick, editor of techguide.com.au. And this week's program is we'll be talking about the new Samsung Galaxy S4 smartphone, the upcoming Apple Worldwide Developers Conference, and a decade of iTunes. Yes, iTunes is already 10 years old. Also on the show, we'll talk about the new TomTom GPS Sport watches, a case that can make your iPhone 5 waterproof, and the interesting Sony home theater system that can make you feel like you're actually at the game. In other news, we'll also talk about how smartphone sales have overtaken regular mobiles for the very first time. And we'll wrap things up with your questions on the Tech Guide Help Desk. And it's brought to you, as usual, by our proud sponsors, Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi products. Plenty to talk about, so let's get cracking. Well, the Samsung Galaxy S4, the highly anticipated follow-up to the Galaxy S3, of course, is now available in Australia. They had a launch. Samsung had a launch in at the Opera House in Sydney last week, and officially announced the fact that the Galaxy S4 would be on sale on Saturday. That is the Saturday that's just gone by, the 27th. It is now available through Optus, Telstra, Vodafone, and Virgin Mobile. They began pre-orders middle of last week, and stock was starting to dribble into the stores. I did a bit of a run around check on Sunday, and there was only a small amount of stock available in around Sydney and around Australia. The main stores, the Optus, Telstra stores, were starting to get their stock as well. But this is a device that was announced a couple of months ago now and is now officially on sale. It's a bit of a surprise to see that so soon after the official launch that the device actually goes on sale. It only went on sale a few days after the HTC One, which going by the early reviews of the Galaxy S4 and even following my own review of the HTC One, these seems to be the two devices that people are comparing, with many reviewers, giving the points to the HTC One. Well, we've only just got our Galaxy S4 review model, and I'll reserve my full review till next edition of the Tech Guide Podcast, so episode 45. I just want to give it a few solid 3 to 4 days of use before telling you all about it in my review and letting you all know whether it does stack up to the HTC One or, in fact, the iPhone 5. There's a lot of usually Samsung's devices compared to the iPhones, but it seems that the comparison is staying on the Android side of the ledger, HTC One up against the Samsung Galaxy S4, and you can't discount the Xperia Z and the Optimus G. There's a lot of good Android smartphones out at the moment. The Galaxy S4 just happens to be the very latest and one of the most anticipated, and it doesn't hurt that Samsung, with a marketing budget that would overshadow probably a lot of company budgets, are not letting anyone forget the fact that they've got a new phone in the market. But a quick look at the new features. It's got a larger screen. The device seems to be the same size as the Galaxy S3, the previous model. But what they've managed to do is actually fit in a larger screen. So the screen, the edges around the screen, the frame around the screen on the edges is a lot thinner. The screen is also a little bit deeper, so it's a lot closer to the home button when compared side by side with the Galaxy S3. It's also got a better 13 megapixel camera, and that 5-inch screen, by the way, is a Super AMOLED screen. It's running Android 4.2 Jelly Bean operating system. And there are a couple of quirky new features with the Galaxy S4. including the ability to scroll just with your eyes. I do notice just in early usage that whenever I take my eyes away from the screen and return them to the screen, a little icon of an eye comes up on the screen. In other words, to say, well, yes, we're detecting you looking at the screen again. There's also gestures. I noticed that you can actually wave your hand up and down in front of the camera, and that will actually scroll web pages. It worked actually quite well. I was viewing techguide.com.au on the Galaxy S4, and that scroll, that gesture functionality worked pretty well. But that's just one, they're just some of the many features we're going to be talking about on the Galaxy S4 when we do get round to delivering our full review, not only here on the Tech Guide podcast, but also on the Tech Guide website. So keep an eye out for that. The Galaxy S4 is here, ready for all the customers who are after it across all those operators I mentioned, Telstra, Optus, Vodafone, and Virgin Mobile. And no doubt it's going to be a highly sought-after device, and we'll tell you all about it in our review next week. But in the meantime, if you have pre-ordered the device, we'd love to hear your thoughts too. So get through to us at info@techguide.com.au.
This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenech.
Well, Apple has announced that the next Worldwide Developers Conference is going to be held from June the 10th. And this is the annual conference of, obviously, developers are make up the backbone of the iOS and Mac OS X system. In other words, the applications that are written for these particular operating systems were the iOS, that's for iPhone and iPad, OS X, that's for the iMac and all the MacBooks. And this is a conference, the Super Bowl, if you like, for developers. So highly anticipated is this show that actually tickets went on sale a few days ago. Not cheap either, $1,399 a pop, and they actually sold out in 2 minutes. That's right, 2 minutes. I think it took a couple of hours last year to sell out. This year, 2 minutes. All sold. Now, what's so attractive about the Worldwide Developers Conference, apart from all the development news, of course, Apple usually take that the opportunity to announce a new iOS operating system and updates to an OS X operating system. Of course, they are talking to developers, and they do need to let them know the developments in the actual software that they'll be developing for. And that makes the main part of the Worldwide Developers Conference. But there have been some hardware announcements in the past at WWDC, as it is affectionately known by those who attend on a regular basis. Now, some of those hardware announcements in the past have been new iPhones. Three iPhones in the past 5 years have been announced at the Worldwide Developers Conference. Back in 2008, 2009 and 2010, so 3 years in a row, there were new devices announced. The latest, 2010, that was when Steve Jobs unveiled the iPhone 4. This was the device that fell into, let's say, the wrong hands, was seen on the Gizmodo website. Steve Jobs unveiled it to the large crowd at the Worldwide Developers Conference, and in the middle of his presentation, he jokingly said, "Stop me if you've already seen this before," which to everyone laughed at that comment, because it was the device that was uncovered, not as Apple would like it to be uncovered. Apple liked to keep an air of mystery to their products, but unfortunately that mystery was taken away back in 2010. Well, I don't know whether that's the reason, but ever since then, no new iPhones have been announced at this actual conference. They've been reserved for later in the year. We've seen the iPhone 4S was released in October 2011. The iPhone 5 was released in September last year, so they seem to be moving towards the later part of the year. But there's a lot of info, a lot of rumors to suggest that this year's iPhone will actually be delivered a little bit sooner, possibly August, September. I've even heard as early as June or July. No, I'm sorry, July. So the Worldwide Developer Conference being in June, a month before an alleged or rumored release time, it could be an opportunity to see the new device. But in the absence of that, we've in the past have seen other products. Last year, we saw the first glimpse of the 15-inch MacBook Pro with Retina display, the first Retina display MacBook, which was a pretty stunning announcement. This year, rumors have already started about updates to those Retina MacBook Pro models. But with Apple, we just never know. There's also been very strong rumors around an iWatch, a smart watch that has been, again, rumored to be developed by Apple. We could very well see it at the Worldwide Developers Conference. Well, Tech Guide is hoping to be there June the 10th to the 14th. June 10 is usually where the keynote address is given at the Moscone Center in San Francisco. Tim Cook will be taking the stage and then handing it over to his various vice presidents to talk about the iOS and Mac OS X systems. Well, we wait with bated breath. June the 10th, it's about 6 weeks away. And will we see the new iPhone? Will we not? Time will tell. Hopefully we will. And hopefully we'll be there to tell you. You're listening to Tech Guide. Well, while on Apple, we're talking about a birthday of sorts. iTunes has turned 10. It was launched back in April 2003. This was the US iTunes store was finally opened. Was the virtual door swung open. It was April the 28th, 2003, to be exact. So it's just over 10 years. Australia, though, did not get its own iTunes store till October 2005. So we had to wait a couple of years, more than, well, nearly 2.5 years before we got ours. I think there were a lot of deals had to be done. A lot of agreements had to be in place with all the music labels, the record labels, to get this deal over the line. It was a pretty big time in digital music when it was a lot, at the time, if you wanted to access digital music easily before iTunes officially opened, it was just everyone was stealing music, wanting that they wanted to download music legally and in a more organized fashion. But until iTunes was launched, it was a little bit rampant out there. But once iTunes was launched, it was greeted with open arms, and in fact, it only took the first few months before they opened with 200,000 songs in April the 28th, 2003. But the 10 millionth song was sold in September. So May, June, July, August, September only took 5 months to go from zero to 10 million songs. The 50 millionth song was sold in March 2004. So less than a year later, they went to 50 million. 100 millionth song, July 2004. December 2004, 200 million. So they doubled from July to December, as was our growing appetite for digital music. In Australia, October 2005, Australian iTunes Store opened its doors. In that first year when iTunes was available in Australia, the top-selling song overall in that first year, back in 2005, was Ben Lee's song, Catch My Disease. The top-selling album in 2005, the first year of iTunes in Australia, was Sarah Blasco, The Overture and The Underscore. That was the top-selling album. iTunes has actually set up a pretty good tribute, a decade of iTunes on iTunes, surprisingly. So you can actually go over to iTunes and click year by year at the musical highlights and download, of course, your favorite songs. But just moving along through the milestones, it wasn't until February 2006 when iTunes, the 1 billionth song was downloaded on iTunes. Now, some of the latest milestones, the Beatles were first available, the entire catalogue first available for the first time digitally in November 2010. And AC/DC's catalogue also hit iTunes in October 2012. So 10 years, happy 10th birthday to iTunes. And it's certainly changed the way we download our music and also now our TV shows and movies, and not to mention also apps and books is a part of the digital content that's available on iTunes. If you want to read more about my report, read all of those about those iTunes milestones, some interesting stats there, you can do that at techguide.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
The Tech Guide podcast is proudly sponsored by Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi gear. Are there any Wi-Fi black spots in your home? Well, now you can enjoy improved Wi-Fi coverage on your Wi-Fi devices, such as tablets and smartphones, throughout your entire home with Netgear's new dual-band Wi-Fi range extender. The WN3500RP will boost dual-band Wi-Fi to the backyard or upstairs bedroom and wirelessly stream music to your connected audio system with AirPlay on the iPhone or iPad or on Android devices using the Netgear Genie app and DLNA. Find out how to boost your Wi-Fi at Netgear.com. techguide.com.au/boost my Wi-Fi.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Well, TomTom is a name normally associated with GPS, in particular in-car GPS devices. Well, they've just revealed a new range of GPS sports watches, which will be good news for those of us who love to hit the road and keep track of our training, or hit our bike, get on our bikes, or even jump in the pool for a swim. There's two main devices in the GPS TomTom range. That's the TomTom Runner and the TomTom Multisport GPS. Now, both of them have large, easy-to-read display, so very high resolution, high contrast. So even if you're running in quite bright sunlight, you'll be able to easily read the device. There's also a graphical training partner, so that helps you get more out of your workout. And also three modes, so that you can either race, set a goal, so you can race against a personal best, set a distance or time, a distance, time, or calorie goal. Or you can set a target for either pace or heart rate, so depending on what you want to hit there. It's also very simple to operate. There's only really one button on the device, a multi-direction button. So even while you're exercising and in any weather conditions, it's quite easy to navigate the menus and operate the device. Very, very simple, very easy to do. The Multisport GPS and the TomTom Runner are both look the same, 11.5 millimeters thick, so suitable for men and women to wear. Also, both of them feature indoor trackers. So even if you're at the gym, you maybe track a run and any movement you're doing, tracks a run you might do on a treadmill, for example, so you can still register your pace and also record the distance that you run, even though you're inside on the treadmill. A built-in feature is a thing called Quick GPS Fix, so they can get your fix pretty quickly. Now, we really have to explain GPS on a watch doesn't mean that you've got a map and it tells you a turn by turn of what you're doing and where you're going. GPS in this case is used to record your distance and also record your speed. Speed is a very easy thing to record, very accurate thing to record using GPS. So once it gets a fix on you, it knows exactly where you go, measures the distance, measures your speed, just makes it a lot easier then to provide a very accurate data for you. Speaking of the data, any of that information that you gather can be shared and analyzed on multiple platforms. There's a few people who like websites and different apps where they can share their information, like the TomTom My Sports website, Map My Fitness, RunKeeper. There's plenty of them out there, My Fitness Pal, Training Peaks. That all of this information is compatible. We'll be able to read what the information gathered by the TomTom devices. Now, the Multisport GPS really lives up to its name. It can be used for multiple sports, not only for running. You can also use it as a bike computer. It also comes with a cycling mount. You can even use it in the swimming pool. So whether on the bike, you can, of course, it's a cycling computer. It's even got a built-in cadence sensor and an altimeter. And in the pool, then, it can capture things like laps, strokes, time, and speed. So if you're a real outdoors person, a real exercise, love your exercise and want to record all of that information, then one of these TomTom products sounds like it's right for you. You can check out the full information, the story, at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide Now, a Tech Guide review with Stephen Fenwick.
Now, how many people have found out too late that the iPhone is not waterproof? Now, I don't think many people deliberately dunk their iPhones, but some of them accidentally drop it in water, spill a drink on it, maybe jump in a pool not realizing it's in their pocket, maybe get pushed in the pool, fall in the pool. End result is an iPhone that is dead on arrival. Now, one little product that can make your iPhone waterproof is a case distributed by Kinexus here in Australia called the Enki. That's E-N-K-I. The Enki case actually wraps the entire phone, so it seals the phone front and back, covers the screen, covers all the ports, covers the back, the camera, the ports, you name it, creates a seal so that once you've got it inside the Enki case, available in black, white, and blue, priced at $49.95, you can actually take the iPhone 5. Not only is it waterproof, it's also waterproof to a depth of 10 meters. So if you do happen to drop it in the water, or you might want to go for a swim, you can take your phone with you. So now you don't have to cut back on the activities worrying that you're going to destroy or damage the iPhone 5. If you've got the Enki case, you can really do whatever you want. You can go for a swim. You can drop it in the toilet. You can drop a drink on it. You can do whatever you want. The Enki case, I think, is going to be a popular choice for those people who don't want to risk damaging their precious iPhones. phones, the iPhone 5, and being already a quite a thin device, the Enki case doesn't add too much bulk to it at all. It's actually quite trim. So that's a good thing. It's not going to really, it's not going to create a huge lump in your pocket. The Enki waterproof case, as I said, available in several colors, blue, black, or white, and is priced at $49.95 and can be purchased wherever good cases are sold. Enki, E-N-K-I, turn your iPhone, make it waterproof. Now, I'm a big sports fan, and there's nothing better that I like than going out to watch my favourite team, the South Sydney Rabbitohs, play live at the ANZ Stadium. That's their home ground. Love being there. But what do you do if you can't get there? Do you want to enjoy the same kind of atmosphere, that stadium sound and feel? Well, Sony's latest home theatre system has actually come up with a way you can do just that. It's the N9100W. Now, this is a home theatre system that's got it's got five speakers, so two fronts, two rears, and a subwoofer. It's also got a Blu-ray player. The rear speakers are wireless, so there's no need to connect the front to the back. They've got a wireless receiver. It's also got a center speaker. But one little feature here is that what we're going to talk about today, and that's what they're called the football mode. Now, what does football mode do? It actually pipes all the ambient noises that you'd normally hear at the footy throughout all the surround speakers, so it makes you feel like you're sitting in the stand. Now, Sony were really serious about getting this feature right, so much so that they deployed their engineers to Brazil, to the famous Morumbi Stadium, capacity of 80,000 people, for them to record the acoustics of the venue and the characteristics of the venue so they can recreate that sound and feel in football mode. So I've actually heard this system. It does actually feel like you're sitting in the stand. You hear the crowd, you hear the horns, whatever's going on around you. You hear the cheers. It's like being at the game. But one other feature that should be mentioned with the N9100W is a feature that many people will like. It's the ability to turn off the TV commentary. So if you just want to hear just the crowd, just the cheering, just the game, but without the annoying commentary, you can actually flick it off using this system, which I think a feature many, many people will welcome, especially those who would rather hear maybe the radio commentary, for example, in the background rather than the TV commentary. Some people may want no commentary. They might want to provide their own commentary. So the N9100W from Sony is really going to be a big hit with sports fans. It's going to be available in Australia within the next 4 to 6 weeks. It's going to be priced around the $1,000, $1,100 mark, which is very reasonable value considering what you're getting. Included with this system are the new magnetic fluid speakers. Now, the magnetic fluid was actually developed by NASA for the space program to go to the moon. And the magnetic fluid was invented so that it could transport fuel around the lunar spacecraft in zero gravity. So what the magnetic fluid does in a speaker, it actually replaces the dampeners. So not only does it reduce the size and width of the speakers and the thickness of the speakers, but it also maintains the really rich sound and volume from those speakers. So I've actually heard these speakers, very, very good quality. And combined with a football mode is something that a lot of fans are going to enjoy, especially if you're a sports fan. If you want to read about all that, the N9100W, you can do that at techguide.com.au.
Now, a Tech Guide news update.
Our news update this week is a very interesting statistic, a historic statistic, we'll go so far as to say. Smartphones have exceeded regular mobile phone sales for the very first time. And it's the IDC, which is International Data Corporation, released these figures. These are for the first quarter of 2013. So smartphones now make up 51.6% of total shipments. Now, smartphones and feature phones are two different things. Feature phones or dumb phones, for want of a better word, they're just a simple, don't have an operating system, just your simple text and call devices, which up until the first quarter of this year were still the dominant mobile device on the planet. Well, for the very first time, smartphones have taken the lead. And speaking of leads, the top vendors are Samsung. Samsung is number one in the first quarter of 2013. They sold 70.7 million smartphones. That's an increase of 60.7% year on year. In second place, Apple, 37.4 million smartphone shipments in the first quarter. These are worldwide figures, I should add. And for Apple, that's a 6.6 increase. LG third, Huawei fourth, ZTE in fifth. LG, pretty impressive though, 10.3 million shipments in Q1 2013. Might not sound like much, but it's 110.2% improvement on last year. I think it's on the back of the Optimus G, which was released in overseas markets late last year, early this year, and the Nexus 4, Google's latest phone, that was actually an LG device. I think that's responsible for that huge pickup there. But thought we'd share that with you. Interesting stats. Just reflects the way that consumer demands now. We want a computer in our pocket. It's not just talking and texting anymore. It's running apps, searching the web, using all those features in the palm of our hand. Smartphones have now overtaken mobile sales, and I don't think it's ever going to go back. Smartphones, well, I think in a year, we're going to probably see that figure jumped up to about 70%. Such is the growth. Here in Australia, I think we're up to about 50, 60, even possibly 70% by now, smartphones in Australia, because we're pretty early adopters. We love our mobile devices, and smartphones are one of those things that we do enjoy. And you can read all those figures and see all of those stats. If you want to go to that, if you want to read all that, you can head to techguide.com.au.
Now, answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
On this week's Help Desk, I thought I'd explain something that you're going to be hearing a lot about this year. I've just returned from Los Angeles, where I was the guest of Sony over in LA there, and it was all about 4K. 4K is the new ultra-high definition standard that we're already seeing in digital cinemas, we're already seeing in TVs. There'll be even more in 2013. Now, 4K, I just want to explain it, is four times the resolution of full HD. So if you think your full HD TV looks pretty good, wait till you see 4K. It's four times as good. Now, what helps the 4K fitting all those pixels on the screen are the large screen sizes. Sony hit the ground running last year with an 84-inch model. LG also responded similarly with an 84-inch model, but they call theirs an ultra-high definition TV. Kind of the same thing. UHD, 4K, they mean the same thing, four times the resolution of full high definition. But Sony, though, have a lot more skin in the game when it comes to 4K, and I'll talk about this again, more of this next week when I fully tell you the story, the 4K story that Sony has to offer. That's why I went to LA and spent a few days over there with them. Sony's story with 4K starts, it goes from lens to the living room, to the lounge room. They not only do they make the cameras that capture 4K movies, they're also through the production process and also the end result, letting you watch those results on a 4K TV. And this year, Sony are going to release a 55 and 65-inch 4K model. In case you don't have a spare $24,000 to buy the 84-inch model, I'm hearing the 55 and 65-inch is going to be a lot more affordable, offering just as much quality. And those magnetic speakers that I spoke about in the previous segment are also going to be included with these 4K TVs. But 4K, if you're saying, well, no, I've never seen 4K, well, you'll be wrong. If you've ever been to a digital cinema, so you've seen a movie in the cinemas, the projector, if it's a digital cinema, is you're seeing a 4K projection. It's a 4K file you're looking at there. Now, imagine being able to enjoy that same clarity in your home using a 4K TV. Well, it's coming. The recent movies shot in 4K, Oblivion, starring Tom Cruise and Morgan Freeman, and an upcoming film starring Will Smith and his son Jaden called After Earth. After Earth is a Sony production, and it was filmed using Sony's F65 4K camera. You're going to be hearing a lot about 4K this year. It's more content's going to be delivered as well. I will explain next week a bit more about 4K and how that content's going to be delivered to us and the upcoming titles we can expect to see in 4K. But 4K means 4,000, and that's the number of pixels across the screen. I think it's 3,860 off the top of my head, the number of pixels across the screen, which is nearly 4,000, hence the reason why it's called 4K. But imagine if you've been to a digital cinema, you've seen 4K already. Now imagine seeing that in your own home. With a 4K TV, you can. Next week, I'll explain more about the 4K story and Sony's involvement from the actual capture to the display. It was a very interesting to hear all about a lot of facts and some fascinating information that I got there, which I'll present to you next week. Well, that's our show for another week. Anything you've heard about in this episode can be seen on our website, techguide.com.au. And we'd love to hear from you, so you can get in touch by emailing us at info@techguide.com.au. Also, send us your help desk questions too. Don't forget to get through to the Tech Guide forum, where you can submit your questions, or you may want an opinion. And not only will myself, but also all our loyal readers will jump in and help you find the answer. And it's all thanks to our sponsors, Netgear, the brand you can trust for all your Wi-Fi needs. That's it for Tech Guide episode 44. Thanks for joining us. We look forward to your company next week. So in the meantime, as we always say, stay safe and stay connected.